Day 150 of the Israeli genocidal war on Gaza claims the lives of more than 120 Palestinians. Israeli forces launch fresh raids in the occupied West Bank, killing another Palestinian and abducting tens of others. And Iran's interior minister says the ill-wishers' adverse propaganda failed to discourage Iranian people from going to the polling stations. Hello and welcome live from Tehran. You've tuned into World News. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Appreciate you being with us. And unfortunately, as always, the top story is Gaza, where 150 days now into the Israeli onslaught on the Strip, and the regime has carried out more deadly attacks on civilian targets. The IOF has committed at least 13 crimes in Gaza during the past day, killing at least 124 people and injuring 210 others. Airstrikes on two houses in Rafah killed at least 17 more civilians and injured tens of others. Two more Palestinians also died in Israeli airstrikes on the Nusrat camp in central Gaza. Another horrific attack targeted a mass grave in Jabalia refugee camp in northern Gaza. Well, according to eyewitnesses, body parts of the martyrs were scattered all around the cemetery after the attack. Israeli forces also stage fresh attacks on Khan Yunis, where they detain dozens of young Palestinians. Israeli-American genocidal war on Gaza has already left 30,534 Palestinians dead and nearly 72,000 injured. Meanwhile, Israel carries out another deadly raid in the occupied West Bank as part of the regime's intensified security crackdown in time with the onslaught on Gaza. Regime forces killed a Palestinian in their latest deadly incursion. While the raid targeted the Amari refugee camp in the central West Bank, regime troops also abducted 20 Palestinians in Al-Khalil. Israeli military also blew up an apartment in Nablus as part of the regime's stepped-up campaign to demolish Palestinian structures. Elsewhere in Tulkaram, Israeli bulldozers also destroyed the infrastructure at Nur Shams refugee camp. The regime has intensified its incursions across the West Bank since it began its ongoing genocide in the Gaza Strip on October the 7th. The raids and settler violence have left more than 400 Palestinians dead. Meanwhile, the 6th International Conference of Union of Resistance Scholars has been held in the Lebanese capital of Beirut. Muslim and Christian clerics from across the world have discussed concrete steps to support the people of Palestine and the resistance. Addressing the event, Hezbollah's Deputy Secretary General Sheikh Naim Qasem called the Al-Aqsa flood operation a legitimate move by Palestinians.
Al-Aqsa storm is a legitimate right of the Palestinians. There is no argument, no debate regarding its legitimacy. They confronted an occupation which continued for 75 years. This occupation cannot be removed except by resistance, and Al-Aqsa storm is the torch of life which feeds the resistance and contributes in the resistance increasing its presence and achieves victories via the steps it takes. This is a legitimate right. You are aware that were it not for the American support, the daily American support via the air bridge and funding via the weapons and ammunition which comes daily, and it has exceeded 250 planes up until now, and around 300 ships, all carrying ammunition and equipment. Were it not for this, Israel would not have succeeded in continuing for even days in its aggression.
In an address to the same conference, senior Hamas spokesman Osama Hamdan said the resistance will continue its sacrifices until the occupation of Palestine ends.
As the steadfastness and resistance on the ground continues from the resistance fighters and the people, we stress to the Zionists and to their partners, the United States of America. In this aggression, we say to them that what they failed to achieve on the ground, they will not be able to achieve politically. Whatever may be the misleading efforts and the pressures which are being exerted, this resistance will continue to be ready to sacrifice, will continue also to achieve more results and to build upon these results until the occupation comes to an end. It will continue to be committed to the norms and the principles of its people. Any flexibility we show in the negotiations out of our care for the blood of our people and to put a limit to the grave pains of our people and their sacrifices in the brutal genocidal war, at the same time we are completely ready to defend our people. And the threats to carry out more massacres in Rafah, this once again proves the nature of this army with its this enemy, with this criminal army, which is represented, which represents one of the ugliest military seen by mankind in history, whereby they announce the massacres and the killing of the civilians as a strategy of war, and they launch attacks on hospitals as if they are bases.
Well, the Islamic Resistance in Iraq says it has attacked the Israeli port of Haifa and the occupied territories in support of the Palestinian people in Gaza. The Iraqi Resistance says it targeted a chemical facility in the port with a drone. It added that the operation was carried out in response to Israel's massacre of Palestinian civilians, including women and children, in Gaza. The Islamic Resistance in Iraq has carried out a number of attacks on Israeli targets in recent months. The group has also struck major American military bases in Syria and in Iraq amid anger over the U.S.'s support for Israel's genocide in Gaza. The IAEA chief says he is willing to visit Iran to discuss the course of collaboration with Tehran. Rafael Grossi made the request in a speech at the beginning of a meeting of the agency's Board of Governors. He said the agency has been unable to conduct extensive monitoring of Iran's nuclear work in the past 3 years. He also claimed that there has been no progress recently in resolving the remaining safeguards issues. He also said the agency has not found any evidence that Iran is producing nuclear weapons. Now, the agency has repeatedly confirmed the peaceful nature of Iran's nuclear program. Tehran walked back on some of its commitments under the 2015 nuclear deal 3 years ago. That, in the wake of the U.S.'s unilateral withdrawal from the deal and the failure of the three European parties of the deal to compensate for Iran's losses. Iran's nuclear chief has recently announced the IAEA's chief is scheduled to visit Iran in April. Well, Iran says the upcoming Jeddah meeting will be a test for the Organization of Islamic Cooperation regarding its commitment to the Palestinian cause. Iran's foreign ministry spokesman says people in Islamic countries expect their leaders to take immediate and firm decisions to end Israel's brutal attacks on Palestinians. Nasser Kanani welcomed what Islamic countries have done for Gaza so far, but he stressed that Palestinians expect actions that would prevent the regime's atrocities. The OIC will hold an emergency foreign ministerial meeting on Tuesday to address the ongoing Israeli genocide in Gaza. Iran's foreign minister will also take part in that meeting. Hello and welcome to this hour's news review. Iran has officially announced the final results of the country's major elections for parliament and the assembly of experts. The interior minister has hailed as glorious the massive turnout of Iranians despite months of psychological warfare launched by the enemies.
And also we had the propaganda ballyhoo launched by the enemies and the psychological warfares conducted by the enemy on the eve of the elections and even few months before the elections. Despite all these, one witnessed a massive turnout by the people, and there was a 25 million population taking part in the elections.
Vahidi says the enemy's unprecedented adverse propaganda failed to disappoint the Iranian nation. He added that Iranians dealt a great blow to the ill-wishers who sought to distance the people from the ballot boxes. Vahidi also underscored that the election organizers managed to maintain the morality and security of the elections on voting day, despite the enemy's attempts to foment insecurity and cast doubt on the validity of the vote. Over 25 million people turned out at the polls on Friday. Some 15,000 candidates vied for 290 seats, matchless the Iranian parliament. Now, hundreds of candidates also competed in the race for the 88-seat assembly of experts. I'd like to welcome my guests to this news review, Gisu Misha Ahmadi and Sabir Abu Mariam, columnist and commentator out of Beirut. Well, thank you both for being with me. Let me start this off with Gisu. So, Gisu, you were present for the Interior Minister's announcement. Let's start from there. And overall, your assessment of what he said and how well the elections went or not.
Well, actually, Marzia, first let me start by confirming what the Interior Minister said in describing the election as a blow dealt to the ill-wishers of Iran. That was definitely the case. Let's not forget that in the lead-up to the election, there was a huge propaganda war launched against this election, and so many campaigns, obviously, from abroad, trying to discourage people, trying to point out problems that any society, Marzia, is dealing with. It's not just Iran that's dealing with some kind of economic problems or issues like that. These are not issues that should discourage people from taking part in the elections. And obviously, Iranians did show that in practice by turning out. 41% is actually a very good turnout for a parliamentary election. Let's define that. You know, Marzia, it's very different from taking part in a presidential election where there are only a few candidates and you have to pick one. In a parliamentary election, the process is more complicated. And in many cases and in many countries where they do practice this kind of democracy, the turnout is the same. And 41% is actually a good turnout considering the really large number of candidates that were taking part. 15,000 in Tehran, only 3,300 candidates for 30 seats. You know, that is a lot. And being able to choose from those and then, you know, take part in the election is in Iran not just a social duty, but it's also a religious duty. So many people do turn out to show their support for the Islamic Republic of Iran and also to do what they're supposed to do as a religious Muslim.
Okay, well, let me get Sabir in on this discussion. Your assessment of the importance of these elections, you know, it's very interesting that, as Gisu said, I mean, it wasn't a presidential election, it was a parliamentary election. But despite that, we saw unbelievable attempts as far as propaganda to make sure that the people do not go out, to make sure that the people became hopeless, to make sure that the people felt that it doesn't matter if you participate, it's not going to change a thing. So your overall assessment of what you saw on Friday.
Thank you for first joining. Of all, I would like to say that the successful elections of parliament and the clerical board, it is a good achievement and the positive achievement of the Iranian nation. As always, Iranian nation standing with the right side of the history, and now again we observe that after all of the propaganda, even the many Western funded and Western governments backed TV channels, social media influencers, they were trying to manipulate, they were trying to hide the actual positions and the actual facts from inside Iran, but all has been failed. And yes, let me say that this is the continuous sequence of the victories of the Iranian nation and especially Islamic Revolution. The sequence of the failures of the Western governments, especially Europe, which is the most criminal and the biased government in the world, which is supporting the inhuman acts across the globe, especially against the Palestinian people and supporting Zionist regime Israel. So now 41% and more than 41% turnout is a very good turnout, and we are hopeful about this turnout. And maybe in future, in the presidential election, I hope this turnout will be increased, because the people of Iran, the nation of Iran, is awakening, and they are very much aware about the conspiracies, conspiracies against themselves, which are created by the United States of America. Mm-hmm. America. Well, let me say one more thing here. I do suggest to the American government, especially to the Biden, you must care about the Zionist regime. There is a collapse about the Zionist regime, and we are witnessing that. They are demanding the elections before the time. So why you don't care about your puppets? Why you are against always you are creating propaganda against Iran, Pakistan, and other Muslim countries? As same like in Pakistan, after election, United States trying to intervene in the election.
And Sabia, just final comments. I mean, your thoughts on this continual campaign to make Iranians feel hopeless, but then we see people turning out for the elections. Your overall thoughts. 1 minute, please.
Yes, I think I said that earlier, that this is the victory of Iranian nation, and this victory must be protected by the Iranian nation in future. This is my short and simple message, because the enemy is U.S. and Israel, and we must stand against their conspiracies by the power of our self-determination, our vote. The vote power is very strong, and the Iranian nation has showed up their power and their solidarity with their system and the Islamic revolution.
I thank both of you for being with me right here on this news review. Gisu Misha Ahmedi, correspondent right here in the studio with me, and Sabia Abu Mariam, columnist and commentator out of Beirut. The United States and South Korea have kicked off the 10-day annual war games that they insist are defensive in nature. South Korea's defense ministry says the number of troops participating in the exercises is twice as many as last year. They involve air forces from both South Korea and the U.S. South Korean media say the drills could also include American strategic assets. The war games are expected to trigger an angry reaction from the Democratic People's Republic of Korea. Now, the country considers the drills in the region, with the participation of the U.S., as an existential threat and rehearsals for an invasion. Pyongyang has responded to the provocations by a record number of missile threats in recent months. And with that, brings us to the end of this World News edition right here. Thanks so much for staying tuned.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
the limelight.
The Bahrain Grand Prix is 20 years old this weekend, but away from the celebrations on the track, activists tell a dark story of power and repression. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for the first part, please. Middle East Eye wrote, Moussa Satrabi was 22 when the Grand Prix came to his home. At the time, he barely noticed the arrival in 2004 of the motorsport in the island kingdom of Bahrain, the smallest country in the Persian Gulf, was being trumpeted by politicians and the ruling royal family. But Satrabi, who holds a diploma in industrial rigging, had more pressing concerns. After 3 months, he had been made redundant from his job at the Bahrain Petroleum Company, BAPCO, as migrant workers, mainly from India and Nepal, were shipped in to replace locals. Satrabi and some other workers who had been laid off started protesting in front of the royal palace. They held signs that read, "We are Bahraini and we don't have a job," and "We are Bahraini and we are looking for a job." One day, the protesters saw a convoy of large vehicles heading in direction of Sakhir, the site of the $150 million circuit that was set to host the inaugural Grand Prix. Preparations were being made. The race was taking place that weekend. Satrabi told Middle East Eye, "The police came and they hit us. They said that they wanted to talk to us about our situation, that the authorities wanted to help us, and that we could discuss what was happening. The protesters went with the police out of sight of the palace and the main road leading to the track," Satrabi said. "It was just a way of moving us so that we wouldn't be seen by journalists and people going to the Grand Prix." At various points, Satrabi told MEE, key Bahraini leaders, including General Khalifa Al-Fadla, came to tell the protesters that they wanted to talk to them and that they would work things out. But the promise of a fair hearing never materialized. As well as protesting unemployment, Satrabi is part of Bahrain's Shia majority, which has suffered waves of repression in a country ruled for over two centuries by the Al Khalifa royal family. One night in March 2005, at around midnight, five cars arrived at Satrabi's house. Security forces took the young Bahraini, bundled him into one of the vehicles, and moved him to what he describes as a hidden place. He told MEE, preferring not to share further details of the assault, "They beat me and said that if we continue to protest, they would go after my wife and family. They took my clothes off and assaulted me." Satrabi was left lying in the street, dependent on the strangers to drive him home, where his distraught wife saw the blood on his clothes. The next year, with another Bahrain Grand Prix on the horizon, Satrabi and his fellow protesters organized demonstrations to try and get some attention for the cause, which by now had broadened into a movement calling for dignity and an end to political repression in Bahrain. Outside the Dana Mall, the Sif district of Manama, Bahrain's capital, journalists and other people involved in F1 had seen the protesters. Satrabi said, "The police used tear gas and rubber bullets on us after we had been seen by F1 buses. They besieged the mall and," Satrabi said, "tied the protesters up. In the aftermath of the confrontation, he was sentenced to 9 months in prison." Saturday, March 2nd, Bahrain Grand Prix marks the 20th anniversary of the inaugural race. For the country's rulers, it is a time for special celebrations to mark Bahrain's landmark 20th anniversary in motorsport. For pro-democracy activists from Bahrain, including the Bahrain Institute for Rights and Democracy, the race is testament to a troubling 20-year legacy of sports washing in Bahrain. Sayed Al-Wadai, Birds Advocacy Director, attended the first Bahrain Grand Prix, getting in with a free ticket the authorities handed out to all school and university students because they wanted to make sure there was a substantial crowd. He told MEE, "The government made a big deal about it. I went, but we didn't understand what was going on. We could just hear lots of very noisy cars." Today, Al-Wadai, who is one of the most prominent Bahraini activists in the world, says that what hurts the most is when F1 makes truly astonishing false claims that it is a force for good. How can this be the case when your partners won't tolerate any form of protest? Bahrain's human rights record over the past 20 years has become significantly worse, with a major setback in 2011 when the mass protest movement was crushed and the race was cancelled. The Bahraini activist had been joined by a group of British politicians, including former Labour leader Jeremy Corbyn and former Shadow Chancellor John McDonnell, who wrote to F1's leadership on February 28. The MPs and Lords wrote, "While F1 remains delusional about its impact, evidence illustrates that the human rights situation in Bahrain has significantly deteriorated over the past two decades." They highlighted the case of Salah Abbas Habib, a 36-year-old anti-government protester who was found dead on the eve of the Bahrain Grand Prix in 2012. The motorsport has not investigated whether the death was linked to its presence in the island kingdom. A spokesperson for F1 told MEE, "For decades, Formula One has worked hard to be a positive force everywhere in races, including economic, social, and cultural benefits. Sports like Formula One are uniquely positioned to cross borders and cultures to bring countries and communities together to share the passion and excitement of incredible competition and achievement. We take our responsibilities on rights very seriously and set high ethical standards for counterparts and those in our supply chain, which are enshrined in contracts, and we pay close attention to their adherence."
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhalladhina amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis-sabri was-salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, now we will listen to the speech of Sheikh Osama Abdul Ghani.
So dear brothers and sisters in Islam, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. How is the intellect measured in the school of Ahlul Bayt? How is aql measured in the school of the Ahlul Bayt? Now in the West, we have, and you see people, I want to give some examples that I'll try and hold back. Some people measure the intellect and how wise they are or how much they've achieved by fancy degrees, SAT scores, right? There are people like this. IQ test. Right? That's how I'm measuring how smart I am. How? Book knowledge. How do the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam measure intelligence? If you and I want to see how successful we are in raising our children to be soldiers of the Imam, what's the mark of intelligence? School of Ahlul Bayt. So this is from Imam Sadiq alayhi salatu wasalam, but you see this from other a'imma, hadith. The Imam says this. So Imam Sadiq was asked, what's aql? What's the intellect? Who's smart? How are we going to raise our kids? The Imam says this. Al-aql, so the intellect, ma ubida bihi ar-Rahman. Aql is that through which God, the Rahman, is worshipped. If your intellect leads to you looking out for your true interests, serving a good God, doing your responsibilities, whether it's for the dunya or the akhirah, right? Islam doesn't say be lazy, doesn't say sleep. No, we already learned, right? It's not that. Islam is here for the dunya and akhirah. مَا عُبِدَ بِهِ الرَّحْمَانِ وَاكْتُسِبَ بِهِ الْجِنَانِ. And it's that through which paradise is earned. So if somebody, however fancy degrees you have, I don't have my aql together. For us, we would judge you that way. Well, you're not very smart, not very bright, not very wise. You're not the sharpest tool in the toolbox. Okay, now, what we're going to do now is look at some of the signs of taqwa. So, if we have these signs, alhamdulillah. If we don't, but we're earnestly making effort, once we start to go over the signs of taqwa, earnestly, we're taking practical steps to be and to have these traits, we're people of taqwa. Otherwise, we've got to question ourselves. So, the leader carefully selected verses, so this is now in Surah 3, Surah Ali Imran, Surah 3, and the verses are from 131 to 136. And remember the question, the next question was, who is in or among the party of God? Okay, let's look at some of these ayat of the Quran, some signs of this. So God's speaking to us. We're going to start with the first verse. وَاتَّقُوا النَّارِ. And be wary of a fire, التي, which, أُعِدَّتْ, it's been prepared, لِلْكَافِرِينَ. Right? Be wary of a fire which has been prepared for the kafirin, those who are disbelievers. Right? Nabi Ibrahim, you remember his story in the Quran, when Allah granted him that lofty station of imamate, which is higher than that of Nubuwwah. In the end of his life, towards the end of his career, he was granted that lofty status of imamate, and immediately he asked, وَمِن ذُرِّيَّتِي, what about my kids? Can they, inshallah, also become imams? Right? Always thought about his children. They say that when Nabi Ibrahim saw hell, instead of praying for his children, when he saw how terrible hell was, he said, nafsi, nafsi, save me. Hell is so terrible that people will forget all of the bonds of kinship. It's only about saving myself when it comes to hell. So God says, you have taqwa, you're a wise person. وَاتَّقُوا النَّارِ, be wary of the fire. أَلَّتِي أُعِدَّتْ لِلْكَافِرِينَ, which has been prepared for the kafirin. Now, next verse. Let's listen to the Arabic of it. وَعَتِيُوا اللَّهَ وَالرَّسُولَ, and obey Allah and the messenger. وَعَتِيُوا اللَّهَ وَالرَّسُولَ, and obey Allah and the messenger. لَعَلَّكُمْ, maybe you تُرْحَمُونَ, perhaps you'll be shown mercy. Obey Allah and his messenger, perhaps you'll be shown mercy. Now you and I, we know there's no difference between obeying Allah and obeying the Rasul. Obedience to Allah is obedience to the Rasul. Why mention it? Is it redundant? Obedience, just say, beware of God or obey God. Why mention definitely the Rasul? Is there an important principle that we're being taught here? This one is, we need it even for nowadays. If Allah had only said, obey Allah. There's a lot of people who could have made claims to be obeying Allah. A lot of people could, and I'm going to mention ayat of the Quran, where in the time of Rasulullah, those who were trying to snuff out Islam were claiming to be Allah's favorite servants, right? How many of you remember George Bush Sr. invading Somalia and telling the military, you're doing God's work? These videos are online. How many of you remember George Bush Jr. saying, God told me to end tyranny in Iraq? God, right? Can you imagine? Yazid of the time, Shimr of the time, talking about his relationship with God. And how many people were fooled? I mean, I looked at the video just to make sure I don't quote it accurately. It was very convincing. Why are you going into Somalia? Right? Some Muslims were probably blown out of their, you know, they probably fell over on their seats when Sleepy Joe, remember in the debate with Trump, he was like, inshallah. Yazid of the time. God need to give us a measuring stick. What's the measuring stick for who's really in the party of God, on the side of God, helping the cause? The ayat of Quran is very clear. وَعَطِيُوا اللَّهَ وَالرَّسُولَ. Right? Obey Allah and the messenger. Right? God stopped that from happening. Because in the time of the prophet, there was actually another group. This is now just for our own reference. If we can look up Surah 5, Surah Ma'idah, Surah 5 and verse number 18. I said that this isn't new. This isn't something that's just happening now. Now politicians are talking about their relationship with God. No, the leaders of Kufr, who are trying to snuff Islam out, leading the people, same people who caused Mubahala to happen, that's to snuff out Islam, the same people who were behind the Battle of Ahzab when all of the Arabs came to wipe Islam off the map, the Battle of Ahzab, Khandaq, right? What did those Jews say? What did the Christians say? The Quran says, Surah 5, verse number 18. وَقَالَتِ الْيَهُودِ. Right? So the Jews said, وَالنَّصَارَى. The Christians also said, what did they say? نَحْنُ أَحِبْ أَبْنَاءُ اللَّهِ. We're the children of God. Right? Rasulullah saying, I'm the abd of Allah. We're the children of God. وَأَحِبَّاءُ. God loves us. So this isn't new.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Rahim Karim Azim Ali. حليم حكيم متين غفور شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف صبور مجيد صلي على محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صلوا
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
In the limelight.
U.S. Congresswoman Ilhan Omar has said the Biden administration greenlighted the Israeli regime's massacre of Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. She denounced Washington's arms aid to Israel as state-sponsored violence. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. China's Xinhua News Agency has covered this story and tells us more. The United Nations Human Rights Chief has expressed dismay concerning the brutality with which the Israeli regime is leading its ongoing months-long war of genocide in Gaza. Volker Turk told the UN Human Rights Council in Geneva, Switzerland, on Thursday, 29th of February, there appear to be no bounds to and no words to capture the horrors that are unfolding before our eyes in Gaza. Tens of thousands of Palestinians, many of them women and children, have been massacred as a result of the Israeli military's onslaught in Gaza. Israel launched its campaign on 7th of October last year, following the Al-Aqsa Storm Operation, a surprise operation by Gaza's resistance movement against the occupied Palestinian territories. Volker Turk condemned the brutality of the Israeli response as appalling and entirely wrong. Meanwhile, the UN official warned about the pending dire consequences of a ground invasion that the Israeli regime has threatened to stage against the southern Gaza city of Rafah. More than 1.5 million of Gaza's 2.4 million plus population have fled to Rafah in southern Gaza Strip, finding nowhere else safe across the coastal sliver. Volker Turk said such a grand assault would contravene the orders issued by the United Nations' highest court. On 26th of January, the International Court of Justice at The Hague, Netherlands, said Israel had to prevent the commission of all acts within the scope of the Genocide Convention. Volker Turk said, "I fail to see how such an operation could be consistent with the binding provisional measures issued by the International Court of Justice. The prospect of an Israeli ground assault on Rafah would take the nightmare being inflicted on the Palestinians of Gaza into a new dimension." Turkey's Anadolu news agency has also covered the same story. The European Union has wrapped a recent unjustifiable attack by the Israeli occupation forces on Palestinian civilians seeking food aid in the besieged Gaza Strip, calling for an international investigation into the deadly incident. In a statement on Saturday, 2nd of March, the European Union Foreign Policy Chief Josep Borrell condemned the restrictions imposed by Israel on the entry of humanitarian aid into Gaza and the opening of Gaza's crossing points. He said the firing by Israeli troops on civilians trying to access foodstuff is unjustifiable. Josep Borrell added, "We request an impartial international investigation on this tragic event, allowing for a clear picture of the events and responsibilities." At least 112 people were martyred and more than 750 others were injured on Thursday, 29th of February, as the Israeli military opened fire on Palestinians who had surrounded a convoy of 38 aid trucks in Gaza, with the Palestinian Health Ministry calling the incident a massacre. The latest Israeli crime comes as non-governmental organizations and United Nations experts have on several occasions voiced fears of famine in Gaza. Gaza has been completely cut off from aid by the Israeli regime since October of last year. The European Union Foreign Policy Chief Josep Borrell emphasized that Israel shoulders responsibility of complying with the rules of international law and to protect the distribution of humanitarian aid to the civilian population of Gaza. The top EU diplomat pointed out the responsibility for this incident lays on the restrictions imposed by the Israeli army and obstructions by violent extremists to the supply of humanitarian aid. Josep Borrell warned that the restrictions on the entry of humanitarian assistance contribute to creating scarcity, hunger and disease, saying it would also lead to a level of desperation that brings about violence. He added, "Unabated fighting and disregard for international humanitarian law will lead to complete chaos, making the distribution of humanitarian aid impossible." Josep Borrell stressed the need to restore a minimum of order and security in Gaza to preserve a humanitarian space. Borrell added, "We urge Israel to fully cooperate with the United Nations agencies and other humanitarian actors involved in the humanitarian response and to allow free, unimpeded and safe humanitarian access through all crossing points in Gaza." The EU's top diplomat also urged Israel to swiftly remove the obstacles at the Kerem Shalom crossing and open the access in the north at Karni and Eretz crossings, to open the port of Ashdod to humanitarian aid and to allow a direct humanitarian corridor from Jordan into Gaza. He emphasized that airdrops should be a solution of last resort, given their minimal impact and their risk to civilians. Borrell also urged the United Nations Security Council to call for an urgent cessation of hostilities in Gaza. The American newspaper The Hill has also covered the same story. U.S. Congresswoman Ilhan Omar has said the Biden administration greenlighted the Israeli regime's massacring of Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. Ilhan Omar denounced Washington's arms aid to Israel, calling it state-sponsored violence. Congresswoman Ilhan Omar made the statement at a press conference on Thursday, 29th of February, along with other U.S. lawmakers, including Representative Rashida Tlaib, Democrat of Michigan, as she voiced concerns about the high death toll of Palestinian civilians and the displacement of over 1 million people in the Gaza Strip, criticizing the Biden administration for approving additional aid to Israel without congressional approval. Ilhan Omar said, "This administration cannot claim to be an honest broker of peace while greenlighting the massacring of Palestinians in Gaza." The restocking of Israel's arsenal is not foreign policy, it is state-sponsored violence waged against defenseless families who want only to live in peace. Ilhan Omar stressed, if we truly want to uplift humanity to protect the innocent people of Gaza, to bring hostages safely home, to hold out hope for peace, then we must demand a ceasefire in Gaza right now. Ilhan Omar also expressed disappointment with the response from the United States and the world's political leaders to Israeli atrocities in Gaza, underlining that empty rhetoric about human rights without any meaningful action is unacceptable. The Democratic congresswoman from Minnesota said the Biden administration's policies lack effective pressure on Israel and fail to deter the Israeli regime from continuing with its crimes against Palestinians. Ilhan Omar added, despite the clarity surrounding Gaza's despair, the response from political leaders has been nothing short of callous. Empty rhetoric about human rights ring hollow when no action follows. She added, this administration's policies fail to meaningfully pressure the Israeli regime through restrictions, sanctions, or any hint of consequences. Each war crime and violation compiled by journalists, human rights groups, and United Nations agencies are bearing witness. You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم.
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
On the occasion of the 40th anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution, February 11th, 2019, the global scene today witnesses a phenomena that are unfolding or will unfold in the near future. The new dynamism of the Islamic awakening movement based on the model of resistance to the U.S. and Zionist domination. The new dynamism of the Islamic Awakening movement based on the model of resistance to the U.S. and Zionist domination. The failure of U.S. policies in the West Asian region and the defeat of their traitorous allies in the region. The expansion of the powerful political presence of the Islamic Republic of Iran in West Asia and its wide-ranging reflection across the world of domineering powers. These are examples of the reputation of the Islamic Republic, which were not achieved except by means of the courage and wisdom of the jihadi, selflessly striving managers.
دنیای اسلام یک
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
The leaders of the domineering system are worried. Their proposals generally involve deception and lies. Today, the Iranian nation, in addition to the criminal regime of the United States, regards a number of European governments as deceiving and unreliable. The Islamic Republic of Iran must prudently observe its boundaries with them. It should not retreat from its revolutionary and national values. It should not be scared by their void threats, and at all times it should consider the dignity of the country and try to wisely, prudently, and of course with a revolutionary standpoint, settle the solvable problems it has in relations with them. In the case of the United States, no problem with them is seen to be resolved. And any negotiation with the U.S. will have no outcome but material and spiritual harms. There are many necessary points to make in this regard. Lifestyle. I will leave it to another opportunity, and I suffice to mention that the West's attempts to promote the Western lifestyle in Iran has caused a lot of irreversible moral, economic, religious, and political detriments to our country and our nation.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Gave me hope, oh Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. I wanna thank you.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.